Well, I think it's less about, you know, the trail cameras itself having a negative impact and more about the use of them and all of the other activities surrounding them. I do not think that trail camera use is infringing on fair chase in most cases. Some of the cellular features, I think, gets us a little closer to that. Right. But in most of the areas we use them, even with the cellular features, I don't think that crosses fair chase lines. About 3 out of every 4 hunters in the United States hunt deer. So whether that's white, you see the whitetails or mule deer,
nice.
So or any of the subspecies, you know, whether it's the cows or blacktails or whatever. In order for them to be successful, they have to be accompanied by a strong educational campaign, so the sportsmen and women really understand why a certain rule or is the way it is. If there are issues where we are negatively impacting a resource through our actions, I think they need to be corrected.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place, my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. It doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primos calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember double bull blinds, but that's a Primos product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots or, you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com, use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the trail camera ban situation that we're facing here in Arizona. And I have Kip Adams with the National Deer Association with us on the line, just because, one, he's not from here, so he doesn't have an emotional, you know, doesn't have any real like dog in the fight one way or another, so we can kind of get an objective view, or, you know, and more of a scientific approach, because basically, in my opinion, the fishing game allows too much of the social get involved in their management, and I know that is a part of management. Just so you guys know, I am a certified manager. I do have a wildlife degree. So I did all that stuff. I understand that stuff. But anyway, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But anyway, Kip, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me on here.
All right. So real quick, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself, and then we'll jump into some of these questions I got for you.
Sure. I grew up in north central Pennsylvania. I've been a wildlife biologist for, we're pushing 30 years now. That's hard to believe. I don't feel old enough to have been a deer biologist for that long. But I'm from the East. I oversee our conservation department for the program with the National Deer Association. And cool thing about that is I get to work in 20 to 25 different states a year. So work with hunters and landowners, outfitters, and our state wildlife agencies all across the United States. So I'm not from Arizona, so I can kind of see it from the outside looking in, but we have members in Arizona. I've worked with your state wildlife agency and other hunters there in the past. So I'm at least up to speed with what's going on there, and very lucky to consider myself first and foremost a hunter. So I learned early on I wanted to be a wildlife biologist, but that stemmed from my love of hunting. So I can completely commit this from all angles.
Awesome. Awesome. And that's what I wanted. So far, like, you know, a lot of the conversation's just been here, and it's the people that are involved, and it's kind of hard to, you know, the waters get muddied when it's just the people that are involved. So before we kind of get, I would like to, what are some of the things like that you do with, how do you use trail cameras in the research that you're doing? What are, you know, some of the ways you guys use trail cameras that obviously have a positive, you know, effect for what the stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, I started using trail cameras back in 1992 or 93 when I was in graduate school. I was in New Hampshire, and actually we were monitoring moose coming into and out of these roadside salt licks. So, and this is way back in the day when all the trail cameras actually were active cameras. What that meant was it wasn't just one piece, it was two pieces. You hooked a transmitter to a tree on one side of a trail and the receiver to a tree on the other, mm-hmm. and something had to actually break the beam. So my use of cameras goes back a long ways. I fell in love with cameras back then, and have used them for state wildlife agencies and for the folks that I work for, as well as me personally, ever since. So there's tremendous utility for researchers with them, tremendous use for hunters from a scouting end, as well as just nature enthusiasts. I know a lot of people, and I've trained a lot of people to use cameras, you know, to photograph anything from birds to, you know, to elk, sometimes because they want to during hunting season, sometimes just because they just want to see what's there and have a little more experience with wildlife in their backyard.
Yeah. No, it's, I think most people's interaction with trail cameras are basically all of which you said, you know, in some way, shape, or form. I've been using trail cameras. I remember, you know, having to put 35 millimeter, you know, film inside them before they were digital, much like, you know, the ones that you were using that you had to break the beam type style. You know, I didn't get really serious into the trail cameras until early 2000s, but even early 2000s, I was when they became more efficient, I started using them quite often, mostly for scouting, but, you know, also just to have an inner, you know, like a whole, I can't even, my brain is not working today at all. I am so, that's what happens when we get any sleep with this. But I just, I would use them for inventory, you know, just to kind of get an idea what's out there, not necessarily to go hunt where that trail camera was hanging, like as for a stand site or anything, but just to know what was using the area so that, you know, I can get an idea of, oh, okay, should I hold off on a certain caliber of buck, or should I even go hunt this area? Is there even a lot of deer using it? You know I see sign, but is this sign old does or, you know, whatever. But I've always thought it was an excellent tool, and used right, and just like anything else in the, you know, in the world, that moderation is the key, you know. Too much of it, too much of anything, even if it's a good thing, is you know, becomes a bad thing. And I think that's part of the problem that we're having here in a few units, is that the trail camera usage is crazy. And specifically, their main problem areas are the strip, unit 9, unit 10 for elk. Well, even deer in unit 9, but. But the strip for deer, especially, they're seeing a lot of cameras, like 10, 15 cameras on one waterhole. And it might be just a handful of outfitters, 5 or 6 outfitters that are running 4 or 5 cameras each. Might be 15 different guys, I don't know. But the main issue that they're having, I think that why they want to ban them all together is those cameras stay up through the season, and guys are hunting on those waterholes, and they send one of their outfitters, you know, one of their guys, the outfitter sends out one of his guides to go check trail cameras right in the middle of a hunt, you know, and it's bumping deer away from it. It's keeping deer off the water, which is not good for them. And this is, you know, something that's making them, or it's a reason that one of the reasons why they're trying to ban them. But it, the main reason is the confrontation between the hunters and people going to check cameras. But I don't know that negativity outweighs the benefits of having trail cameras. So,
yeah, and I know there's reasons, there are a lot of different reasons that people may use them. We help teach people. Actually, we have a book called Deer Cameras that we wrote to teach people how to either do formal population surveys using cameras. So mm-hmm. that'd be something very much on the research end. Also, how to use them from a straight monitoring perspective, you know, during the hunting season or prior to the hunting season leading up to it. So I think it's important that, you know, we identify exactly what we're talking about relative to those use, because using them for estimating population size and age structure and fawn recruitment rates and that kind of stuff is very different from, hey, just using them, you know, to monitor either behavioral patterns or movement patterns or time of day, that type of thing. And I think that's largely the issue we're talking about in Arizona right now is, you know, on those water holes, lots of cameras, you know, lots of user conflicts among the people who put them there and mm-hmm. You know, some harassment issues on the wildlife coming into those water holes. So, that's, you know, a very specific issue relative to camera use that, you know, that's very different from using them from a research end or some of the other ways that people can monitor wildlife with them. And you guys are especially prone to something like this, given, you know, you're an arid state.
So, right.
You know, if you had water everywhere, this would be a non-issue and probably not even being discussed.
Right.
But the fact that you are an arid state and you have, you know, limited areas, that definitely ramps up the discussion around this and is largely, I think, what has brought, you know, this particular proposal to a head right now.
Right. No, and I agree we do have an issue that needs to be solved, but I don't know that an all-out ban is going to solve it in that one way or another, because I guarantee you, for everybody that I've kind of talked to and interacted with on social media, everybody's like, I'm not going to not run cameras. I'm going to run cameras, you know? Let them catch me, you know? Like, that's the mentality, and I think it's going to cause even more problems. You know, because it's the guy that's sitting on the water hole is going to say, there's a camera here, and the guy's going to come check it, and he's going to, well, you're illegal and this and that. It's just going to give more fuel to the fire. I mean, I got my own ideas, but I didn't have you on here so you can hear me talk about my ideas. But, you know, before we kind of look at the social problem that we're dealing with, I would like to look at it from a scientific way. Do you think that... Now, mind you, in these 2-3 units that I discussed with you, there is an issue with the amount of people, the amount of human traffic that's keeping animals away from water. But at least during the day anyway, do you think in all your dealings with trail cameras and all your research, do trail cameras have a negative impact on wildlife?
Well, I think it's less about, you know, the trail cameras itself having a negative impact and more about the use of them and all of the other activities surrounding them. You know, for example, there's lots of different ways we can impact wildlife, you know, in many parts of the West and in New England, where I used to run New Hampshire Fish and Game's deer and bear programs. Snowmobiles themselves are fine, but mm-hmm. when you put lots of snowmobiles into a deer that are in a wintering area situation, that's a problem. Right. So it's kind of like this here, you know, our cameras themselves. Now, cameras aren't a problem, but it's how we use them and how we concentrate that use, you know, at certain places or certain times of the year where we can run into problems. So do I think cameras are a problem by themselves? Not at all. But we certainly can use them in ways that can be a problem for other land uses and for certain wildlife populations. That definitely can happen.
Okay. Let me ask you this, because this was a point that was brought up, and I think one of the commissioners, he's a very late onset hunter, and I think he's one of the ones that brought it up. But do you think that trail cameras are not in the spirit of fair chase?
I think that some of the technology we have now is getting closer to that line of Fairchase. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge trail camera fan. I've used them, as I said, for a long time. I continue to use them both professionally and personally. My kids use them. Members of my camp use them. I strongly encourage people to use them because it can show wildlife species and behavioral things that, you know, you would never get to see or almost never get to see otherwise. So I think that they are great to get people engaged with wildlife and to develop an understanding or an appreciation for wildlife so that then they, if they understand it better, they tend to better protect that wildlife. Mm-hmm. So I am a huge trail camera fan. Having said that, the organization I work for, the National Deer Association, you know, we're very much follow fair chase standards and abide by that. And actually, we did a national survey a couple of years ago with all state wildlife agencies to see, hey, who allows trail camera use? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't? Who allows it if it's cellular or not cellular? Who allows the use of drones? Because what we're seeing, John, is that a lot of these technologies were really starting to advance past many of the laws that we have in place to protect wildlife.
Right.
And especially drones. I mean, they had blown way past. At least trail cameras, you know, we were a little closer to being caught up with. So ultimately, I do not think that trail camera use is infringing on fair chase in most cases. Some of the cellular features, mm-hmm. I think, gets us a little closer to that. Right. But in most of the areas we use them, even with the cellular features, I don't think that crosses fair chase lines. There are some specific examples because of either cover terrain or habitat features, you know, or cover types that allows probably more of an infringement on fair chase than others, the waterhole example being one of them. But overall, I think trail camera use is completely within fair chase lines, similar to using fish finders. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you have a fish finder on your boat or out when you're out ice fishing, you know, doesn't mean you're going to catch those fish. I see it very similarly that way with trail cameras. However, the one exception now can be a little bit of these the cellular features on particularly some really, really open areas. So that gets a little closer to it. I don't think it's necessarily crossing it yet, but definitely inches closer to that line.
Well, so Arizona has banned the use of cell phone cameras in 2018. So we're not allowed to use cell phone cameras. And, you know, it's a catch-22 because we've always had a law in place anyway called, will call hunting. So, like, and it was mainly for lions and bears that we couldn't go run dogs or whatever, tree a lion, and then call a customer up or client up and say, hey, I got a lion tree. Do you want to come shoot it? But it also stemmed into the trail camera thing. Oh, I got a buck on this waterhole. You know, let's go kill him. So that law was always in place to protect the fair chase, but they went ahead and banned it. Now, I say it's a double-edged sword because you're complaining about too many people going into watering holes and dispersing game away from these water holes because of the human pressure. But if you had a cell cam there, you wouldn't have to go check it. You know, there's that. Now, I know a lot of the cell phone camera stuff, it fits, but I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second. It fits what we're talking about, where you can check your trail camera from like 200 yards away. I think that's the best combination of the best merger between both sides of the fence, because now I don't have to go physically to the waterhole. I can stay back 200 feet and check the camera. I don't have to go disturb the waterhole. I don't have to disturb the hunter that might be sitting there. I don't know. I think those are like, that's the type of trail camera that people should be using. And I think that's what maybe the fish and game should start, you know, allowing if they're going to run them on waterholes. If you're not running them on a waterhole, you just run them on game trails or, you know, mineral lick or whatever. Well, even that's because we're not even allowed to do mineral. It has to be straight salt now or something designed for cattle ranching. Those, you know, those type of sites, you know, you don't have that argument with somebody. They don't, it takes away the whole people thing. So
Yeah, those are nice. Those are, and you know, that's one of the areas of technology or technological advancements here that I think is going to help us,
right?
Because that is a win-win. That's good from, you know, a user end. You know, it's good from a wildlife end, and from a hunter perspective, you know, that's perfect. You know, you don't want to be going there to have to collect
leaving
those pictures or
and everything
anything
else,
anyway. So yeah,
exactly.
So, no, that is great. That is a very good, I think, piece of new technology that's coming out now that, you know, there's not a lot of hunters that have those yet, but,
right.
You know, in the future, a lot more will. So, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. I know there's a few companies that make them. But to go back to what you were saying and go back to the whole fair chase thing. So just a personal example, we ran to this year was a really terrible drought year for us. We had zero rains in the monsoons. I mean, these deer were just now getting some rain finally in January. Normally it rains a good portion of December, and then we got the monsoons in you know, August, September, and July, and there's a fair amount of water everywhere, you know. There's now we have a situation this year where, you know, there might be 25 water holes in a unit, let's say, just arbitrary number. Only 5 of those water holes have water. So you know they're going to go water at one of those 5 water holes. You know there's going to be deer there. If you sit there long enough, you're going to get one, right? So we had one of those situations this year. But from the fair chase standpoint, right, I ran cameras on water holes because we had clients coming in. I'm an outfitter here as well. And I personally sat, you know, 6 full days in a blind that I had set up for myself, that I had plenty of trail camera pictures of deer. And I sat 6 full days that I did not have one mature buck come in, not one. And I was seeing 50 does a day and you know, 10 spikes a day. So something about my egress or whatever ingress was keeping the big bucks away, you know? So to say that, you know, having a, you know, deer pattern because you have them on camera, and I mean, these deer were literally hitting that water every single day between this time and this time. I had it as about as dialed in as you could think, and I did not get one. My guide, who spent literally the whole year running 40 cameras on, you know, 35 different holes and knew when these deer were taking a poop, that's how well he had them dialed in. He sat for 11 days and never got his target buck. You know, so to say that a trail camera is such a leg up. Yeah, I mean, it definitely gives you information. It definitely is going to help you, but it helps you just about the same as your bow being 10 feet per second faster than it was last year. You know, it's not a guarantee, you know.
That's for sure. You still, it's like they say, that's why you still play the game on Sunday. You got to go. So, nope, you're exactly right. Just knowing when they typically are there does not ensure by any means that you're going to get a shot.
Right. And honestly, even the cell cam thing, it's like, it's still a moment in time. It's just a snapshot of the timeline. Okay. Oh, I just got a picture on my phone and there was a buck on that waterhole 2 minutes ago. Well, those bucks don't stay there for more than 2-3 minutes, drink, and then they're gone. And, you know, it's not like, hey, hurry up, let's get over there. I guess maybe if you happen to be hanging out, you know, close by, if you're hanging out close by, you might as well have been sitting in the water hole. But like, I don't really even see how that's even considered a will call type hunt. I guess maybe if you know a buck hit a water hole and you were going to spot and stalk them and you had a hill close by that you can glass them up from or something, maybe it gave you an upper hand, but you know, yeah. For you to go drive in or to sneak into a water hole on a, I don't know if you, especially with coos deer, I don't, you know, they're so skittish. Like you got to see like how many times they go to jump while they're going to drink because they get ambushed by lions all the time on those water holes. The chances of you sneaking up over the, you know, the bank of one of these things and shooting one is pretty slim to none. So.
And you're right. And even just because your camera lets you know he's there right now, doesn't mean that deer would have been there if you were sitting there.
Right.
So it's not like you can use it. So lots of things go into, you know, their choices for moving a certain way or a certain time. And so that's one of them. And, you know, you guys are certainly the hot issue right now, or the hot state right now relative to this, but there are a handful of other states that are discussing this or have already outlawed these cameras too. Mm-hmm. You know, at least five other states have restrictions on use of cameras. New Hampshire was one of the first ones, and they actually outlawed the cellular technology a few years ago.
Okay.
And that was at least in part because of, you know, deer in the winter, late hunting season, get pushed into these deer wintering areas where, you know, they really funnel a lot of deer into a small area of right. evergreen cover, you know, to survive winter. And so people with trail cameras there, once those deer are in those areas, it's not exactly like shooting fish in a barrel by any means, but it is a very different hunting experience once they're in those wintering areas. So that state made the decision a few years ago, you know, they felt that it crossed the line from a fair chase standpoint. So they did outlaw them. And I believe they were the first to do that. Colorado and Georgia and some other states since have some restrictions on cameras, but that was a big step that New Hampshire took. And I was actually surprised. I didn't think that they would get it passed. They did. I think partly, John, you know, some state wildlife agencies and their board of commissioners take a harder stance on the fair chase part of it. Some are a little more lax and say, well, you know, that's probably okay, or we feel it's okay. And some say it's absolutely not. So some of that comes down to a little bit to just where that state draws the line in the sand, and where you guys are right now, you know, they just tend to be a little more conservative with where that line is. And so I guess because I work in so many different states a year, I see that happen regularly on a variety of different issues. So I don't always agree with where the agencies draw that line, but I at least understand where they often are coming from with right. that. So.
Right. Well, you know, I've been part of some of that in the past, and my take on it is, not to bag on commissioners and whatever, but they're under a certain amount of pressure from anti-hunting groups, and they let's feed them a bone is the you know, let's give them something that's going to make them go away. This is not a big thing. We're not giving up much. Let's just give them this so they stop howling at us, you know? And they try to do it with mountain lion hunting here. So we gave them a season. It used to be year round, and now there's 2 months that they're, you know, during their quote unquote breeding season that we don't hunt them. My stance on this is, if we keep giving a little chip of hunting away to anti-hunting groups because they're bitching about something every single time, and little by little, they just keep chipping things away, and then there's not going to be anything left. And the problem, I think the problem with the hunting industry as a whole, or the hunting community, let's call it, if you can even call it a community, is that the guys, you know, the whitetail hunter in New York could give two shits about lion hunting in Arizona because it doesn't affect him. You know, so, and where anti-hunting groups do very well is that the Save the Whale guys have no problem with locking arms with the polar bear guys, because one way or another, they're going to take away something from us, where hunters just don't like, okay, it doesn't affect me. I don't give a shit. You know, when they start coming for, you know, not being able to use, I don't know, whatever, in New York for whitetail hunting, and now the guy in Arizona doesn't care about the guy, you know, and it's just like this constant thing that happens, that hunters are very self, it's a individual sport, and we're very self-centered and very egocentric when it comes to hunting, even though you would think differently. If you look on social media, everybody's, you know, high-fiving each other and blah, 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 whatever. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a big competition. Everybody's in competition with each other. Nobody gives a shit about anybody else's, like, you know, I mean, I know we have conservation organizations, and we do very well with that stuff. I mean, we do. But when it comes down to these like little battles, we lose them because of that, for that very reason, that it's not a unified thing. Like there's, I feel like how many hunters out there don't condone bear hunting and lion hunting or predator hunting in general. They just don't condone it. But in my opinion, I feel like if hunters supported all hunting, it may not be your cup of tea. You may not do it. You know, I'm not into, you know, whatever. I don't know. Actually, I hunt everything, so I can't even use myself as an example. But if it's legal and I'm doing it by the book, I don't care. I'll go hunting for it. But, you know, but there are certain things that I only wanted to do once. Like I went lion hunting with dogs once. I just wanted to do it for the experience one time. I don't have a problem shooting a lion if I glass it up or call one in, but I'm not going to go with dogs again. But not because I didn't enjoy it, but it's just something that's just not my cup of tea.
Yep.
And but there's guys that live for that. And I'm not going to take it away from those guys that live for that because, you know, it's legal hunting and it's part of, as long as it's part of a, the overall grand picture of conservation and done scientifically, in my opinion, the way it's managed, I'm not opposed to it. And I will stand up for that guy. And I just don't think enough people do that.
Now you're right. As hunters, we do way too good of a job dividing among ourselves and not supporting each other and, you know, and our right to hunt and, all the privileges we have, well, you know, we're a minority, you know, less than 5% of the U.S. population hunts now. So, we don't get to hunt because 5% of us like it. We get to hunt because luckily the vast majority of the U.S. public supports hunting. So, it's incumbent upon us as hunters to make sure we portray a good public image and maintain that support. So, we get to continue. So you're right. We need to do a better job uniting among ourselves and the different groups, whether you shoot something, you know, with a bow or a gun, or, you know, you chase lions or deer or upland birds. All us hunters are our buddies. We need to stick together better than we often do.
Right. For sure. You know, I always felt like if the wing shooter, cause that's, I feel like that's the largest population is wing shooting, right? I don't know that to be 100% true, but I believe it is, like, you know, between waterfowl and wing shooting, that's the largest segment of hunting. And then of course, whitetail would be the next, but.
Well, actually deer hunting is number one.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yeah. There's deer hunting is number one and turkey hunting is number two.
Okay. Turkey hunting is number two.
Yep. And about 3 out of every 4 hunters in the United States hunt deer. So whether that's white, you see the whitetails or mule deer.
Nice.
So, or any of the subspecies, you know, whether it's the cows or blacktails or whatever. But so deer hunters, we greatly outnumber all the other species hunters. But man, if we could just all band together, and that's part of what we try to do at the National Deer Association, you know, is to be able to help that group of deer hunters, you know, make sure that we have good hunting opportunities and support good laws and proposals and oppose bad ones, because the turkey hunters, they do a pretty good job uniting. Mm-hmm. You know, the bird hunters do, you know, especially the waterfowlers, but deer hunters in general just haven't. And
right,
we could help ourselves by joining a little better. And so we try to do that. We're definitely gaining a lot of that in the East through the National Deer Association. And, you know, as we cover more mule deer issues and, you know, and deer in your part of the world, you know, we gain more members in that part of the U.S. as well, which, you know, helps all deer hunters. So that's one of the big goals that we have.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's probably our biggest hurdle we have as a group, is to be able to, you know, unify on everything. Because, I mean... Yeah. We would be so much better off as a whole if we really just take a second to think about, you know, all these issues. Anyway, it kind of took us off a little bit of a tangent there, I know, but for me, I think there's definitely go arounds. Other states have figured it out. I know having a trail camera season, there's a couple of states out west here that do that. That could be effective, you know. Their argument for that is, oh, we have hunting 10 months out of the year here. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we're not deer hunting 10 months out of the year. You know, it's basically from August, you know, an elk hunting, August to December, or I guess the end of January. So, and it's a long time not to have cameras out there, but I don't know, or have a way to have each deer season or each elk season, if there's an active elk season or active deer season, you can't have a camera running. I mean, there are downtimes, but that might be ridiculous too. I know. I understand that they're kind of up against a rock and a hard place, but I feel like they're taking the easy way out and just saying, let's just ban it all together so we don't have to think about this.
One of the good things is, we are huge fans of the public having a chance to engage on these issues.
Right.
And today, state wildlife agencies, engage the public at much higher rates than they ever have before. That's a really good thing. So in some cases, when hunters and landowners make their opinions known, they have changed, the way the proposals have been written or the way that it actually worked out. And I think, here in this case, if I'm an Arizona hunter or sportsman or woman, I absolutely would make my opinion known on this. And by being engaged at a higher level, that provides more information to the commissioners. But what many folks don't realize is, the state wildlife agency is responsible for the science end of it. They're the biologists. Hey, here's what's going on. Here's what the data shows. The commissioners have to take account the biological side from the agency, as well as the social side from the hunters. And
right.
As you said, sometimes they lean too heavy on the social and not as much on the bio. Some states, it's just the opposite. I think they rely too much on the biology. And this is coming from me as a wildlife biologist. But public engagement opportunity is crucial. And that's what you guys are going through now. And regardless of how this issue works out or any other management issue they have there, in order for them to be successful, they have to be accompanied by a strong educational campaign. So the sportsmen and women really understand why a certain rule is the way it is, whether he or she agrees with it or not. If they don't understand it, it's likely not going to be followed or have the intended consequences.
Right.
So whatever happens, if it turns out that cameras are banned, just banning them is not the solution. The solution has been, okay, here, let's make sure we provide all kinds of information to hunters and landowners so that they know why, and then from that, sometimes you end up with a better solution to the problem. Or even in this case, say it turns out that the cameras are not banned. Even with that, a strong educational campaign letting hunters know why this was an issue and the problems associated with it, can reduce some of those conflicts between users and stop maybe some of the harassment of the wildlife species, or again, come up with a good solution for almost everybody, that the hunters like and that the agency likes. So this is a critical place right now. And, it wasn't all that long ago that hunters really didn't have a voice in this. Our right. agencies and the commissioners told us what it was going to be, and that was it. So I'm at least glad now that hunters get to engage and make their opinions known and, share information and share views. So that's a critical part of it and a big piece to this whole thing to let us know at the other end of this if this is going to, work and have the intended consequences or not.
Right. Well, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you had to take a crack at it, what solutions do you think you can come up with?
Well, I think that, I would continue to encourage use of cameras and being engaged with our outdoors and with wildlife. We always have to look at, in my opinion, at the resource first. So if there are issues where we are negatively impacting a resource through our actions, I think they need to be corrected. And that, in this case, it may be with a camera. Examples I have in New Hampshire or northern New England are with snowmobile use in winter areas. I've been involved in issues where folks were shed hunting during the winter and unnecessarily chasing animals out of those areas, which was negatively impacting survival. So yep. I think we have to look back to the resource first, and regardless of what it is, if we are doing something that is having a detrimental impact, then I think we should try to stop that. And in this case, as much as I love to use cameras, if using those cameras was negatively hurting, whether it was deer or elk or causing lands to be posted because of too many user conflicts with too many people at a waterhole, then I would work to find some alternative way to, relieve those conflicts so that, we didn't lose access to a property or we weren't unnecessarily harassing wildlife. So, you know, I'm lucky where I live in Pennsylvania. You know, it's not an arid state. There's not the issues with, you know, water holes where we just congregate deer all the way down. The flip side of that is a lot of times during the deer season, you know, we don't congregate deer at all, and it becomes very, very difficult to try to pattern them. Right. So, you know, I continue to use cameras, or can, you know, it doesn't always help me because of the unpredictability of the movement patterns. But, at the end of the day, John, I think it has to come back to the resource, you know, and if we're harming them, we should do something to correct that.
Right. No, I'm with you. I'm with you if we're definitely, if it's causing harm to the deer. And like I said, there is some argument to that, that, you know, the deer are being forced to come into water at night and, or whatever the case may be. But I don't know. I still feel like that there's a solution that everybody wins, even the deer. It's really, like I said, it's really just a few units. So, I mean, I know you don't want to make two different laws, one for certain units or whatever, you know, or restrictions in certain units or whatever, but that might be an issue, or it might be in a solution rather. But I really feel like, you know, the fact that we have that technology out there to be able to check cameras from a couple hundred yards away, you know, maybe that's the only type of camera you're allowed to run on water, you know, where you don't have to physically go pull the card, and it doesn't give you the notification on your phone that, hey, that, you know, so you're not having that will call hunt. I think, if you're running cameras on salt and or whatever, you know, or trails or whatever like that, like that's a non-issue. It's not, you're not having fights. You're not pressuring deer. You're not having any of the issues that they're wanting to ban the cameras from. So, you know, leave that alone. I mean, at the very least, if you want to just ban them on water, then ban them on water if you have to, but don't ban trail cameras all out. I don't know from a enforcement side, really, one is any more, you know, one is any easier to enforce than the other. I mean, I assume a game and fish warden can go and patrol, you know, water holes and check people for cameras and whatever, but then that's kind of doing the same thing that that the people who are going to check the cameras is doing. And you got a guy, you know, showing up to check cameras, and besides, that's a, you know, a resource that you're wasting a shit ton of time on. But
yeah. And you'd be amazed at the number of, you know, laws like that that are written in a certain way, you know, to make them enforceable. Sometimes, you know, the best solution to something sounds really good on paper, but in reality, you know, either could not be enforced, or, you know, it would be too difficult for, you know, law-abiding hunters, you know, to follow. So there's definitely the law enforcement part that comes into the exact wording of some of the you know, the rules that we have to follow. So, and I'm sure with this one, I will guarantee you that the law enforcement has been, you know, this has been discussed with them, and they've had an opportunity to share their views on this, maybe not from the biology side of it, but from an enforceability side.
Yeah. I mean, I always felt like a nice compromise would be, you know, to leave on the water hole specifically would be, let there be a season. Okay. So from, you know, August 21st, opening day of deer season, to January 31st, you're not allowed to run cameras on waterhole, you know? And then, you know, you're allowed to run trail cameras year round on, like I said, licks or trails or pinch points, whatever, saddles, anywhere else you would want to run a camera. I think that makes sense. You know, you're eliminating the, but then you go back to what we were just talking about, the enforcement side of it. It's like, you know, how are you going to stop people from running? You can't. You really can't, because, you know, there really isn't only 25 water holes in a unit. That was just a crazy arbitrary number. There's probably a couple hundred, you know, and yeah, to have that patrolled, I don't know. It's just crazy. It's just a shitty position to be in one on either side of the fence, but they got to come up with something that's smart, and an all out ban, I don't think is the answer, in my opinion. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. Do you have anything else you want to add before I let you go here?
I feel for you guys out there. You know, it's a tough situation for both sides. You know, the agency's getting beat up. They don't like that. Hunters feel like they're losing something. You know, they don't like that. So hopefully, something will come out of this that allows, you know, the best thing for the resource, which and ultimately would be the best for the hunters. But it's going to probably get worse before it gets better relative to this. So it'll be interesting, you know, how many hunters come out and make their voices known. And I hope a bunch do and share information and, you know, become engaged with the agency because that all just leads to more positive relationships in the future. And so I feel for you, John. I hope this works out for you. And exciting times always in wildlife management for sure. Beats the heck out of sitting in a cubicle somewhere, though, doesn't it?
Yep, it does. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and I appreciate you. And keep up the good work that you're doing out there. And we'll like to have you back on eventually here and talk about some, you know, deer management and deer behavior and stuff like that. So,
all right, that sounds good. It's good to talk with you, and I certainly appreciate you being a hunter. And I'm glad to hear that that you chase so many different species during the year. That's good. That's good for the future of wildlife. So, thank you, and here's to a great 2021.
Yes, thank you. Have a good one.
All right, hey, have a great day, John.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com. And be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.